For the first time since 9/11, our combat mission in Afghanistan is over.
President Obama in his State of the Union address Tuesday. Of course, the mission is formally over, but there are still more than 10,000 U.S. troops working in Afghanistan, and more than 2,000 American troops died there. How will history view this war? Veteran war correspondent Jack Fairweather says it could turn out to be the defining tragedy of the 21st century. We'd add that's saying something, since it has a lot of competition. In the first few pages of Jack's new book, we get this kind of detail. Some Afghans believed that Americans trained mice to run up cable to surveillance balloons, collect information, and run back down. Members of the Bush administration huddled at Camp David, figuring out a response to 9/11. Attorney General John Ashcroft sat down at the piano to bang out "Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen" while President Bush did a jigsaw puzzle. We also learned that Afghan President Hamid Karzai fell into a depression, blamed himself for the wreckage his country had become after 13 years of war, until he decided he didn't wreck the country. The Westerners who portrayed the ideals of the good war did. The book is called The Good War, Why We Couldn't Win the War or the Peace in Afghanistan. And Jack Fairweather joins us from Istanbul, where he now lives. Jack, just remind us, the good war, what was that?
On the one hand, the good war was the effort to get rid of al-Qaeda and remove that threat that had led to 9/11. On another hand, it was the effort to rebuild Afghanistan, a country shattered by 20 years of war since the Soviet occupation in the 1970s. And on the promise of rebuilding the country, the US, the international community, committed to a multi-year nation-building project, which started in 2001, was optimistically meant to end a few years later and continues to this day.
And you say the idea was destined for failure, not because of history showed it didn't work, but because the U.S. overinflated the Taliban and al-Qaeda.
There was a fundamental mistake that was made in conflating the threat posed by al-Qaeda with that of the Taliban. Al-Qaeda was this international jihadist group that had already killed thousands of Americans. The Taliban was a much more local, tribally based organization that ran a repressive regime in Afghanistan. And you may remember that famous speech by Bush on September 20th, 2001, where he said, "You're either with us or against us." And in sort of setting up the rhetoric for what became the war on terror, he lumped together al-Qaeda and the Taliban. The US military got rid of al-Qaeda from Afghanistan pretty quickly, but then they started fighting and targeting and arresting, detaining Taliban fighters. And I think one of the great mistakes of the war that's not fully appreciated was the way in which Taliban commanders who were ready to lay down their arms were riled up by US actions. There was a major error that I think is every bit as great as the one when we think about the Iraq War, the decision to disband the military and criminalize Saddam Hussein's Ba'ath Party. This had a similar effect, alienating a large portion of southern Afghanistan.
What about Hamid Karzai, the president? You paint incredible pictures of him as a man with a motley following of just a handful of people who went by himself to attack the Taliban and was captured, and just almost this sort of cowboy scenario. How would you characterize him? Is he a villain in the book? Was he mistreated by the U.S.? How would you characterize it?
Hamid Karzai is one of the victims of the war and really at the vortex of our misconception of the type of war we were fighting in the early days when he emerged, as you say, from this grand escapade in the south as the leader of the country. He was lionized by the US and held up as a sort of Gandhi-like figure who was going to bring democracy and Western institutions to the country. He was much more a sort of tribal leader, used to tribal systems of governance. And instead, Karzai went from being the great hero to the great villain by in the latter stages of the war, when he was held up as being not much better than a mobster, a petty criminal whose family was engaged in all sorts of nefarious activities. And, you know, as ever, when there are two extremes, the answer is somewhere in between. And I think one of the mistakes of the war was not to recognize what Karzai was about and take him on and work with him on his own terms rather than those we sought to impose on him and the country.
He becomes almost a Shakespearean figure, kind of continually walking in these circles trying to figure out what went wrong. What about President Obama? How do you think history will look at President Obama's role in the surge and in ultimately embracing the notion of a good war?
I think if future presidents want a textbook on how not to manage a war, they will look at the first year of Obama's presidency with regard to Afghanistan. I think what he quickly realized that Afghanistan was vastly more complicated than he had gave it credence to on the campaign trail, and that more troops wasn't necessarily the answer. And that key realization was one that he didn't, unfortunately, act upon. Instead, he began a long, bitter, confusing process of review. He ended up committing the US to a strategy that was neither full-blown counterinsurgency as the generals wanted, nor a much more limited counterinsurgency as someone on Obama's team requested.
Well, look, you end your book with a quote from the former U.S. Secretary of Defense, Robert McNamara, who had a change of heart after the Vietnam War, years after, and came to see the folly and wrote, "We viewed the people and leaders of South Vietnam in terms of our own experience. We do not have the God-given right to shape every nation in our own image or as we choose." Then you go on to write, "The damage of these misconceptions in Afghanistan has been great, yet even now it's not too late to chart a different course." How?
I think those who knew Afghanistan in 2001 and visit the capital now, Kabul, you know, are amazed by the transformations that have taken place from a war-torn, barely functioning city to one in which, there are in some places shopping malls springing up, some roads are being paved, and there's a change. I always think back to a trip I made to Afghanistan in 2012 when I went out to a outpost in Helmand with the U.S. military to an Afghan police checkpoint, and the police radio was on. And the Afghan police officer was having a conversation with his Taliban opposite number about 400 yards away. And they were exchanging insults at first, but then as the sort of sun began to set, they began singing songs to each other. And before you knew it, they were talking about their girlfriends, talking about, you know, their teenage hopes and dreams. And if the West can help that police officer and that Taliban teenager find common ground, that's where the future lies. And, from that experience at that checkpoint, I don't think that, you know, their differences are so great that they can't be resolved.
Well, we'll leave it on that hopeful note. Jack Fairweather, his new book is The Good War, Why We Couldn't Win the War or the Peace in Afghanistan. We'll have an excerpt for you at hereandnow.org. Jack, thank you so much.
Thanks, Robin.